Welcome to Face with me, Lauren Booth. As the paint of a new era dries over anti-Mubarak graffiti in Tahrir Square, what had been called a spontaneous revolution in Egypt may prove to be a long-planned youth uprising by youth movements in Cairo and Tunis. Meanwhile, it's not that youth may be uprising that is shaking Washington and Tel Aviv, but the fear of Islamism, rather than discontent, maybe uniting the Arab world in revolt. To discuss these issues with me today is a highly esteemed author and academic whose speciality is Islamic studies. He's no stranger either to the brutalities of the former Mubarak regime, having been unable to return to his native Egypt for some 15 years. Face to face.
Thank you.
A strange time, an uprising that began with flames in Tunisia, spread across the North Africa to Egypt, has now seen a dictator unseated, and the fear of democracy in the West. No joy. I mean, if you watch CNN and Fox News, the fear of Islamism overtaking the joy of democracy at work. Is there something to fear?
I think first what is important is to look at what happened, because it was unexpected just to have these young people in Tunisia just after the, we knew the repression. You know, I also have been banned from there for more than 12 years, and I was criticizing the regime with so many people who were facing torture and exile, and a regime was, you know, a corrupt regime, and it was known. And then suddenly something happened in this country, and as you said, I don't think that this is, it was not planned in Tunisia the way it was in fact in Egypt. The situation are quite different, but something happened there. And then the young people and the people coming from all the political spectrum, from the left to the Islamists, were saying, no, we don't want, you know, dictatorship, and we want to be free. We want to have an autonomous country. Independence is something which was important. And I think that what we got from the West as a first reaction is first a state of denial, and the most interesting statement came from the States, saying, oh, the people are right. And we know today that the States, the United States of America and Barack Obama, they were in touch with the foreign minister, with the army, and they plan to remove very quickly Ben Ali from Tunisia in order to avoid contagion in the region. So this is something which is quite interesting. You have one strategy there, and people, and in France, saying, you know, we are scared because the opponents could be, you know, Islamists, and it could be, and this is also what Ben Ali said, straightforward. He said, oh, these are all Islamists. Why? Because in the West, this was the rhetoric that we got for years. Why the West is supporting dictators? Because they are protecting the West and the Muslim majority countries and the Arab and the Middle East from Islamists. And the Islamists are all radicals, what we have with Al-Qaeda and all this. So it is a rhetoric spreading around fear and justifying to deal with dictators everywhere in the region. And then in Egypt, when I was asked, do you think that something could happen in Egypt? I said, no, I don't think in Egypt. It's too important, strategically speaking, for the Americans. Something could happen there. And then it happened because the people came. And then now we know as well that youth were preparing for this for the last 3 years. They were involved in a strategy that were to remove the or to fight or to struggle against the dictatorship and Mubarak.
So if America and Europe are wrong to have misgivings about this particular state of the uprising, is there some kind of schism that could happen between these youth movements and, say, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, who might have different agendas?
I think they have. And I think, once again, now, inductively, we have to look at the whole situation, not thinking that the American administration is not at all involved. We know that the army that is now taking over, and all the ministers that were appointed by Mubarak are still in charge, and they are going through the transitory period now. And I think we have to be very cautious we have to be happy, and it's good that this is happening, because it means that in the Arab world, the people, this mass protest are showing the people non-violent resistance to dictator. It works, and this is something which is important. Now we don't have to be naive. We should understand that behind the scene, these statements that we had from the American administration is something which is as if they don't know what is happening. And on the other side, to get a sense of what is happening on the streets is that we had young people coming with, spreading around awareness. We are able to do it. But all the other parties, political parties from the left, the communists, the Nasserists, and the Muslim Brotherhood, they came afterward and they tried to find their place in the whole movement. Look at what happened even with El Baradei. Baradei, as we say in English, came and he was outside the country for 20 years, and the Muslim Brotherhood, not knowing where to put themselves in the whole strategy, said, oh, he is our man.
You know, you recently wrote an article in which you said that the Muslim Brotherhood is being careful not to frighten the West with any of its rhetoric or actions. Does that mean, in your opinion, that the West does have something to fear and the Muslim Brotherhood is just being canny about its agenda at the moment?
No, it was I said this in the short period of time. We saw them changing strategies and putting themselves, and they didn't want to be at the forefront, because what is clear is that they are not leading the movement. They were not leading the movement, and they are not leading the movement. And they felt that what was coming from the West is, oh, these are the people who are behind. And why they were scared of this? Because remember, the first 2 days of the revolution and the uprising, the government arrested 500 Muslim brothers just to tell the West, these are the people who are behind. So they were very scared just to be used by the government to justify any kind of repression. And then also from the Western administrations in Europe or in the States, people saying, look, once again, the Muslim Brotherhood are leading. So they were trying to find, as I said, a place in the whole movement. And if we look at the Muslim Brotherhood today, and this is why when I was asked by American news agency or in the West, say, okay, look, don't portray the Muslim Brotherhood in something which is a monolithic movement and in a radical movement. They have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. They have nothing to do with the structure. Even, Ayman al-Zawahiri, who is the spokesperson, even for now presented in the media as the spokesperson to, the violent extremist group, is just insulting them, because for him, the fact that they are legalist, non-violent, and they were in Egypt for 60 years dealing with the repression and within...
They weren't created as a non-violent movement, though, to be fair. They did fight the Stern Gang and the Ergun famously in Palestine, and they have said in the past that if needs be, they would rise up again. So, yes, they're a political movement now.
No. From the very beginning, it was quite clear that they had, and they said this, and this was the first stance that Hassan al-Banna, when he created the movement, was saying, it's non-violent, we are using all the legal means in Israel, at that time it was in Palestine, because we are facing Irgun that are killing people and innocent people, is right to get an armed resistance to terrorism done by Irgun and Stern. This was a very specific situation in Palestine, and he was differentiating between what we can do in Egypt and the way we resist in Palestine. This is the first. And second, when some of the people and one individual started to kill people in Egypt, he said, no, you are not among us. This is not our way to deal with Egypt. We are a non-violent movement. So this was said from the very beginning, but it was also clear that resistance to armed repression means that you can use weapons and you can protect yourself. So this is the Muslim Brotherhood within. What now it's important for us is to say that over the last 60 years, the Muslim Brotherhood went through different stages because they were anti-colonialist and they were non-violent and legalist, and then they got the repression after 52 by Nasser. He put them in jail and he killed the leaders, and then there was some of them left even the Muslim Brotherhood by saying it's Islamically right to kill the tyrant, so they left, and we have a division. So even now, beyond the people who left the Muslim Brotherhood, you have a generation gap between the first generation and the young generation.
So, of course, when there are these gaps, very easy for foreign agencies and forces to then make these divisions even clearer in what will be a new young state. I mean, I'm thinking about Lebanon. Could we, in your opinion, be looking at an Egypt that's as uncomfortable with itself, has that friction inside it that Lebanon always has, that will just rumble along uncomfortably in the future?
Anyway, it will. A state of instability, a transitory period, is normal. This is what we will get from, you know, a dictatorship after 30 years, and what could happen in our way towards a democratic process. But Lebanon is not the Egypt because of, you know, many historical reasons and the different religions and the way it was built, the way even Lebanon was built and thought at the very beginning. Egypt is a very long tradition of people living together. In Midan al-Tahrir, what was very important is Muslims, Coptic, atheist, agnostic, together saying no in the name of our country. And if you listen to what they were saying, they were never targeting the West. They were never targeting, you know, America. They were saying we want our country to be free. We want independence. So it's really much something which is a nationalist movement trying to get freedom. And from within, what is important now, and this is what I have been saying for days, but before this for years, you cannot, you know, end up blaming the West of using dictators if the opposition and the forces, the opposing forces in Egypt are not able to come together. They knew that they didn't want Mubarak. What we want them to tell us now, what do they want in the future? Because the American administration is not going to look at them and wait for them to decide.
So, obviously, a period of transition with a great deal of external interest, because let's be clear here, to America and to Israel, Egypt has been a linchpin of the Middle East. 80 million Arabs, a large Muslim population, behaving themselves, you know, accepting treaties with Egypt. Let's look now at that border a bit closely, because the 1979 peace treaty contained this pledge, and I'm going to read it to you now, from Carter to Menachem Begin. In the event of an actual or threatened violation of the Treaty of Peace between Israel and Egypt, the United States will, on request of one or both of the parties, take such action as it may deem appropriate to achieve compliance with the treaty. Not a great deal of wriggle room, even for a new government, is there?
Exactly. I think you are right. And this is why the first thing that the army said is that we are going to abide by this, you know, contract and this agreement from the very beginning. I think that we have to be clear on this. Why the state of Israel doesn't want anything which has to do with true democracy around it? Why? Because all the people, the Egyptian, were against, for example, what Mubarak did just after the Gaza massacre. It's just to close the borders and to say there is no connection. And so the betrayal of the Palestinians is something which we know coming from the Arab countries. So many people and many Arabs are always saying, oh, you know what, the source of all our problems is the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. I'm saying the opposite, is the consequence of all these problems, that you don't have people and governments standing for the rights of the Palestinians and even for the rights of their people. Now, the Egyptian, the great majority, they were just against anything which has to do with the Mubarak agreement with the states and with Israel to protect Israel in such a way and not to react. Even what we know is that Mubarak knew before it happened that Israel was going to attack Gaza. What's that? Mm. And this is where, when you have now this, the only claimed democracy in the region, Israel, telling us and telling Washington, you have to support Mubarak because this is the only way for security and stability. We have to respond to this by saying, you will never be in security if around you, you are only having peace with dictators. Mm. This is a very short-sighted perception of the reality. On the long run, what you need is people around you. You make peace with people, not with tyrants.
How much a threat do you perceive to Egypt from outside military forces? If they do, in this new transitional government, say, you know, we're going to look at the gas deal that we've got that gives Israel virtually complementary gas. We're going to look at the Philadelphia corridor, which is at the Rafah crossing, which is a really compacted, dangerous piece of territorial land for Israel. We're going to look at these things. The US has already sent warships in that direction. Mm. Israel's already made noises. Don't mess with us. I mean, these are people already under threat, aren't they? And they're still in transition.
Yes, but, you know, and this is why I think that we have to be very cautious with our assessment of the situation. I don't think, you know, this is also what I said just before even the Egyptian revolution, by saying, who is going to let Egypt be completely independent and free? What we see now is that the army, which is taking over, is completely connected in very close links between the army and the Americans. So all these treaties agreements and contracts, even the transnational corporation that we have there, are going to protect their interests. So I don't see now anything that could just, you know, I was hopeful and still is, but I'm not naive on this. I think that what the American administration is doing now and European countries is just to protect all this agreement to secure, the Israeli interests. And I think that this is why now we have new voices coming from Israel saying, oh, that's good, that's fine, go ahead with, and we are happy for the Egyptian people, while at the beginning they were not.
Israeli generals would perhaps say, don't be naive and don't expect us to be naive. Hamas Article 2 of the Charter says the Muslim Brotherhood is part of us and we're part of the Muslim Brotherhood. Nice. Israelis would say that the government would say they sealed the Gaza crossing to stop the movement of weapons. Mm. So Gaza's going to stay shut, whoever's in power in Egypt.
Yes, I think that this is the situation. I think that, anyway, you know, they were saying that the Muslim Brotherhood can, you know, take over in Egypt and it would mean that the relationship between Egypt and Hamas is going to change, so Israel would be facing, you know, instability and a new way, a new opposition. I think that this is not going to happen. This was, you know, statements and slogans to help them to control the situation, and this is what is happening now. And once again, even with Hamas and the way it's used now to be demonized and to help them, the Israeli, to carry on their policy on the ground with settlements. This is something that we have also to assess because, they are instrumentalizing Islamism today, any kind of Islamism, from terrorism to legalists to people who have been elected. They have been elected to use this as a threat and to exploit this as a means for them to carry on their policy. And I think that this is where, for us, from where we are in the West, we have to be critical and we have just to show how much there is hypocrisy in all this, political statements.
Mm. One of the methods that Israel and America has used in which to frighten members of the public about instability in the Middle East is an apparent link between Hamas and Iran. And now it'll be Hamas, they'll be saying Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Iran. Is there an outside pressure, in your opinion, on Islamists on these new revolutions, or are they going to be free for the people to decide what happens?
No, I don't think that they are going to be free, and all this discussion, everything, you know, all this, you know, pressure and political pressure, media coverage, just showing, you know, be careful, what is happening now in Egypt is what happened in Iran, so it's going to be an Islamic Republic, and Islamic Republic means that they will have connection now between within Palestine, Egypt, Iran, Lebanon with Hezbollah. So it's, you know, once again, the international Islamist network and now putting Israel in danger, and putting Israel in danger mean the Western interest. I think that all this is just to help them to justify why, for example, at the beginning they were not so happy with all these movements coming from, you know, people saying no to dictators, and to justify their connection with dictatorships, and to come with, you know, periphery, at the periphery to speak about, you know, women's rights and democracy and secular, and not to speak about interest, not to speak about geostrategic, you know, perception of the reality. At the center, this is what the question is. And I was happy to listen to Noam Chomsky, who said, look, don't tell us that you are scared of Islamists. When you needed them, you were dealing with them in Afghanistan and everywhere. The point is that you don't want these countries to be independent, because independencies, for them, independence means that they are going to question the kind of relationship you have with the dictators before and with their future.
You know, there was a great piece by the legendary Robert Fisk, the writer, and he said that had Obama on day two or three of the demonstrations in Tahrir Square come out and said, I'm with you, brothers, America backs whatever the people decide, they would be, maybe the Egyptians would be waving American flags in Tahrir Square. Do you think he's delegitimized himself even further in the eyes of the Middle East? Or is there still a chance for strong links between the new government in Egypt, whoever it is, and Barack Obama, for example?
I'm less optimistic than that. And I think that, people are thinking that he was clumsy in the way he dealt with the whole thing. I think exactly the opposite. I think that he was very clever, very smart in the way he dealt with it, saying, oh, we are not involved in this, and saying, oh, Obama, Mubarak is going to step down, and then he didn't, just a few hours later, as if he was not involved, as if the U.S. administration was not involved. And in my opinion, from day one, they were connected and they were involved with one.
Are you saying that, you think the American government approved of cars crashing into demonstrators? And
no, not everything, no. To control the direction doesn't mean that they are controlling everything. But they were with one segment of the army, knowing that this army... I think that the decision for the army not to react and to be in between, it's coming from Washington. I don't think it's coming from them. And they did exactly the same in Tunisia.
So do you, in your opinion, then Washington is still controlling the Egyptian army, which is controlling the people?
Yes. And I think that this is why I'm very, very cautious. I'm happy, but I don't think it's the end of the story. And my perception from the very beginning is that the American administration was playing a win-win game. If he is going to survive, he's going to be very weak, Mubarak, so we will have our interests protected. But if he's not going to survive, we have other people and we need to go through this. So I think that at the end of the day, and not only from a political perspective, we have to be very cautious. We very often look at, you know, Egypt and the dictator from a political angle. There are lots of economic interest and geostrategic interest there with transnational corporation. And Mubarak and his son were very rich and controlling. To remove them from the economic side and to give some freedom from the political side could be a very smart American strategy.
Let me just ask you, after 15 years, do you feel safe enough to go back to Egypt now, and what sort of role would you play if you can?
No, I would like to go, of course, but I think it's too early. I don't trust what is happening, and my role is, you know, I don't have the Egyptian nationality and passport. My role is just as someone who is trying to share views and to be involved in anything which has to do with independence for the Muslim majority countries, to play that role and to go back to my father place, because I was unable to just pray on his river.
Tariq Ramadan, thank you very much. Well, a transition period in Egypt, but goodbye from us here at Face to Face. See you next time.